But perhaps not.
Solo was the type to hold debts of honor sacred, something he'd probably picked up from his Wookiee friend somewhere along the line. If he could find a spare Star Cruiser, he'd likely send it along. And once here, it would be easy enough to steal from whatever handlers Solo sent with it. Perhaps such a gift would help assuage Grand Admiral Thrawn's inevitable anger over what had happened here today. But then, perhaps it wouldn't. Card looked back at the ruins of the collapsed arch, a shiver running through him. No, a warship wasn't going to help. Not on this. Thrawn had lost too much here to simply shrug it off as the fortunes of war. He would be back, and he would be coming for blood. And for perhaps the first time in his life, Card felt the unpleasant stirrings of genuine fear. In the distance, the airspeeder disappeared over the forest canopy. Card turned and gave Hilliard City one final lingering look. One way or the other, he knew he would never see it again. Luke got Lando settled into one of the Falcon's bunks, while Han and a couple of Card's men busied themselves outside, getting a tow cable attached to the X-Wing. The Falcon's medical package was fairly primitive, but it was up to the task of cleaning and bandaging a blaster burn. A complete healing job would have to wait until they could get him to a Bacta tank, but for the moment he seemed comfortable enough. Leaving R2 and 3PO to watch over him, despite his protestations that he didn't need watching over and, furthermore, had had enough of 3PO, Luke returned to the cockpit just as the ship lifted off. "Any problems with the tow cable?" he asked, sliding into the co-pilot's seat.
"Not so far,"
Han said, leaning forward and looking all around them as the Falcon cleared the trees.
"The extra weight's not bothering us anyway. We should be all right."
"Good. You expecting company?"
"You never know,"
Han said, giving the sky one last look before settling back into his seat and gunning the repulsor lifts.
"Card said there were still a couple of chariots and a few speeder bikes unaccounted for. One of them might have figured that a last-ditch suicide run was better than having to go back to the Grand Admiral and report."
Luke stared at him.
"Grand Admiral?"
he asked carefully. Han's lip twisted.
"Yeah. That's who seems to be running the show now for the Empire."
A cold chill ran up Luke's back.
"I thought we'd accounted for all the Grand Admirals."
"Me too. We must have missed one."
And abruptly, right in the middle of Han's last word, Luke felt a surge of awareness and strength fill him, as if he were waking up from a deep sleep, or stepping from a dark room into the light, or suddenly understanding the universe again. The Force was again with him. He took a deep breath, eyes flicking across the control board for the altimeter. Just over 12 kilometers. Card had been right. Those Isla Miri did indeed reinforce one another.
"I don't suppose you got a name," he murmured.
"Card wouldn't give it to me,"
Han said, throwing a curious frown in Luke's direction.
"Maybe we can bargain the use of that Star Cruiser he wants for it. You okay?"
"I'm fine," Luke assured him. It's like being able to see again after having been blind."
Han snorted under his breath.
"Yeah, I know how that is,"
he said wryly.
"I guess you would." Luke looked at him. "I didn't get a chance to say this earlier, but thanks for coming after me."
Han waved it away.
"No charge. And I didn't get a chance to say it earlier."
He glanced at Luke again.
"But you look like something the Prume dragged in."
"My wonderful disguise," Luke told him, touching his face gingerly. "Mara assures me it'll wear off in a few more hours."
"Yeah, Mara,"
Han said.
"You and she seem to be hitting it off pretty well there."
Luke grimaced.
"Don't count on it," he said. "A matter of having a common enemy, that's all. First the Forest, then the Imperials."
He could sense Han casting around for a way to ask the next question, decided to save him the trouble.
"She wants to kill me,"
he told the other.
Any idea why?
Luke opened his mouth, and to his own surprise, closed it again. There wasn't any particular reason not to tell Han what he knew about Mara's past. Certainly no reason he could think of. And yet somehow, he felt a strangely compelling reluctance to do so. It's something personal, he said at last.
Han threw him an odd look. Something personal? How personal can a death mark get?
It's not a death mark, Luke insisted. It's something, well, personal.
Han gazed at him a moment longer, then turned back to his piloting.
Oh, he said.
The Falcon had cleared the atmosphere now and was gunning for deep space. From this high up, Luke decided, the forest looked rather pleasant.
You know, I never did find out what planet this was, he commented.
It's called Merkur,
Han told him.
And I just found out this morning. I think Card must have already decided to abandon the place even before the battle. He had real tight security around it when Lando and I first got here.
A few minutes later, a light flashed on the control board. The Falcon was far enough out of Merkur's gravity well for the hyperdrive to function.
Good.
Han nodded at it.
Course is already programmed in. Let's get out of here.
He wrapped his hand around the central levers and pulled. And with a burst of star lines, they were off.
Where are we going?
Luke asked as the star lines faded into the familiar mottled sky.
Coruscant?
A little side trip first, Han said. I want to swing by the Sluis Van shipyards. See if we can get Lando and your X-Wing fixed up.
Luke threw him a sideways glance.
And maybe find a star cruiser to borrow for Card?
Maybe, Han said a little defensively. I mean, Akbar's got a bunch of stripped-down warships ferrying stuff to the Sluis sector already. No reason why we can't borrow one of them for a couple of days, is there?
Probably not, Luke conceded with a sigh. Suddenly, it felt really good to just sit back and do nothing. I suppose Coruscant can do without us for a few more days.
I hope so, Han said, his voice abruptly grim. But something's about to happen back there, if it hasn't happened already.
And his sense was as grim as his words.
Maybe we shouldn't bother with Sluis Van then,
Luke suggested, feeling a sympathetic shiver.
Lando's hurting, but he's not in any danger.
Han shook his head.
No, I want to get him taken care of. And you, buddy, need some downtime too,
he added, glancing at Luke.
I just wanted you to know that when we hit Coruscant, we're going to hit it running. So enjoy Sluis Van while you can. It'll probably be the last peace and quiet you'll get for a while.
In the blackness of deep space, 3,000ths of a light year but from the Sluis Van shipyards, the task force assembled for battle.
The Judicator has reported in, Captain, the communications officer told Pelion. They confirm battle ready and request order update.
Informed Captain Brandi that there have been no changes,
Pelion told him, standing at the starboard viewport and gazing out at the shadowy shapes gathered around the Chimera, all but the closest, identifiable only by the distinctive patterns of their running lights. It was an impressive task force, one worthy of the old days. 5 Imperial Star Destroyers, 12 Strike-class cruisers, 22 of the old Karak-class light cruisers, and 30 full squadrons of TIE fighters standing ready in their hangar bays. And riding there in the middle of all that awesome firepower, like someone's twisted idea of a joke, sat the battered old A-class bulk freighter. The key to this whole operation.
Status, Captain.
Thrawn's voice came quietly from behind him. Pelion turned to face the Grand Admiral.
All ships are online, sir,
he reported.
The freighter's cloaking shield has been checked out and primed. All TIE fighters are prepped and manned. I think we're ready.
Thrawn nodded, his glowing eyes sweeping the field of running lights around them.
Excellent,
he murmured.
What word from Merkur?
The question threw Pelion off stride. He hadn't thought about Merkur for days.
I don't know, Admiral,
he confessed, looking over Thrawn's shoulder at the communications officer.
Lieutenant, The last report from the Merkur Landing Force.
The other was already calling up the record.
It was a routine report, sir, he said. Time log, 14 hours 10 minutes ago.
Thrawn turned to face him.
14 hours,
he repeated, his voice suddenly very quiet and very deadly.
I left orders for them to report every 12.
Yes, Admiral,
the comm man said, starting to look a little nervous.
I have that order logged right here on their file. They must have...
He trailed off, looking helplessly at Pelion. They must have forgotten to report in, was Pelion's first hopeful reaction. But it died stillborn. Stormtroopers didn't forget such things, ever.
Perhaps they're having trouble with the transmitter,
he suggested hesitantly. For a handful of heartbeats, Thrawn just stood there, silent.
No,
he said at last.
They've been taken. Skywalker was indeed there.
Pelion hesitated, shook his head.
I can't believe that, sir,
he said.
Skywalker couldn't have taken all of them. Not with all those Issa Miri blocking his Jedi power.
Thrawn turned those glittering eyes back on Pelion.
I agree,
he said coldly.
Obviously, he had help.
Pelion forced himself to meet that gaze.
Card? Who else was there?
Thrawn countered.
So much for his protestations of neutrality.
Pelion glanced at the status board.
Perhaps we should send someone to investigate. We could probably spare a strike cruiser. Maybe even the Stormhawk.
Thrawn took a deep breath, let it out slowly.
No,
he said, his voice steady and controlled again.
The Sluis Van operation is our primary concern at the moment, and battles have been lost before in the presence or absence of a single ship. Card and his betrayal will keep for later.
He turned back to the communications officer.
Signal the freighter, he ordered. Have them activate the cloaking shield.
Yes, sir.
Pelion turned back to the viewport. The freighter, bathed in the Chimera's lights, just sat there looking innocent.
Cloaking shield on, Admiral,
the comm man reported. Thrawn nodded.
Order them to proceed.
Yes, sir.
Moving rather sluggishly, the freighter maneuvered past the Chimera, oriented itself toward the distant sun of the Sluis Van system, and with a flicker of pseudo-velocity, jumped to light speed.
Time, mark,
Thrawn ordered.
Time marked,
one of the deck officers acknowledged. Thrawn looked at Pelion.
Is my flagship ready, Captain?
He asked the formal question.
The Chimera is fully at your command, Admiral.
Pelion gave the formal answer.
Good. We followed the freighter in exactly 6 hours, 20 minutes. I want a final check from all ships. And I want you to remind them one last time that our task is only to engage and pin down the system's defenses. There are to be no special heroics or risks taken. Make that clearly understood, Captain. We're here to gain ships, not lose them. Yes, sir!
Pelion started toward his command station.
And Captain? Yes, Admiral?
There was a tight smile on Thrawn's face.
Remind them, too,
he added softly,
that our final victory over the rebellion begins here.
Chapter 31.
Captain Afayan of the escort frigate Larkis shook his head with thinly disguised contempt, glaring at Wedge from the depths of his pilot's seat.
You X-Wing hotshots,
he growled.
You've really got it made, you know that?
Wedge shrugged, trying hard not to take offense. It wasn't easy. But then he'd had lots of practice in the past few days. Afayan had started out from Coruscant with a planetary mass chip on his shoulder, and he'd been nursing it the whole way. And looking out the viewport at the confused mass of ships crowding the Sluis Van orbit dock area, it wasn't hard to figure out why.
Yeah, well, we're stuck out here too,
he reminded the captain. The other snorted.
Ha! Yeah, big sacrifice.
You lounge around my ship like overpriced trampers for a couple of days, then flit around for 2 hours while I try to dodge bulk freighters and get this thing into a docking station designed for scavenger pickers. And then you pull your snubbies back inside and go back to lounging again. Doesn't exactly qualify as earning your pay in my book.
Wedge clamped his teeth firmly around his tongue and stirred his tea a little harder. It was considered bad form to mouth back at senior officers, after all. Even senior officers who'd long since passed their prime. For probably the first time since he had been given command of Rogue Squadron, he regretted having passed up all the rest of the promotions he'd been offered. A higher rank would at least have entitled him to snarl back a little. Lifting his cup for a cautious sip, he gazed out the viewport at the scene around them. "No," he amended. He wasn't sorry at all that he'd stayed with his X-Wing. If he hadn't, he'd probably be in exactly the same position as Affion was right now, trying to run a 920-crew ship with just 15 men, hauling cargo in a ship meant for war. And like as not, having to put up with hotshot X-Wing pilots who sat around his bridge drinking tea and claiming with perfect justification that they were doing exactly what they'd been ordered to do. He hid a smile behind his mug. Yes, in Affion's place, he'd probably be ready to spit bulkhead shavings too. Maybe he ought to go ahead and let the other drag him into an argument, in fact. Let him drain off some of that excess nervous energy of his. Eventually, within the hour even, if Slua's Control's latest departure estimate was anywhere close, it would finally be the Larkess's turn to get out of here and head for Bipfash. It would be nice, when that time came, for Affion to be calm enough to handle the ship. Taking another sip of his tea, Wedge looked out the viewport. A couple of refitted passenger liners were making their own break for freedom now, he saw, accompanied by 4 Corellian corvettes. Beyond them, just visible in the faint light of the space lane marker buoys, was what looked like one of the slightly ovoid transports he used to escort during the height of the war, with a pair of B-wings following. And off to the side, moving parallel to their departure vector, an A-class bulk freighter was coming into the docking pattern, without any escort at all. Wedge watched it creep toward them, his smile fading as old combat senses began to tingle. Swiveling around him in his seat, he reached over to the console beside him and punched for a sensor scan. It looked innocent enough. An older freighter, probably a knockoff of the original Corellian Action 4 design, with the kind of exterior that came from either a lifetime of honest work or else a short and spectacularly unsuccessful career of piracy. Its cargo bay registered completely empty, and there were no weapons emplacements that the Larkess's sensors could pick up. A totally empty freighter. How long had it been, he wondered uneasily, since he'd run across a totally empty freighter?
Trouble?
Wedge focused on the captain in mild surprise. The other's frustrated anger of a minute ago was gone, replaced by something calm, alert, and battle-ready. Perhaps, the thought strayed through Wedge's mind, Affion wasn't past his prime after all.
That incoming freighter, he told the other, setting his cup down on the edge of the console and keying for a comm channel. There's something about it that doesn't feel right.
The captain peered out the viewport, then at the sensor scan data Wedge had pulled up.
I don't see anything, he said.
Me either, Wedge had to admit. There's just something... blast.
What?
Control won't let me in, Wedge told him as he keyed off. Too much traffic on the circuits already, they say.
Allow me.
Affion turned to his own console. The freighter was shifting course now, the kind of slow and careful maneuver that usually indicated a full load, but the cargo bay was still registering empty.
There we go, Affion said, glancing at Wedge with grim satisfaction. I've got a tap into their records computer. Little trick you never learned flitting around in an X-Wing. Let's see now. Freighter... Narcissitu. Out of Nellak Kram. They were jumped by pirates, got their main drive damaged in the fight, and had to dump their cargo to get away. They're hoping to get some repair work done. Slua's controls basically told them to get in line.
I thought all this relief shipping had more or less taken over the whole place,
Wedge frowned. Affion shrugged.
Theoretically, In practice, well, the Sluissi are easy enough to talk into bending that kind of rule. You just have to know how to phrase the request.
Reluctantly, Wedge nodded. It did all seem reasonable enough, he supposed, and a damaged, empty ship would probably handle something like an intact full one. And the freighter was empty. The Larkess's sensors said so. But the tingles refused to go away. Abruptly, he dug his comlink from his belt.
Rogue Squadron, this is Rogue Leader, he called. Everyone to your ships.
He got acknowledgements, looked up to find Affion's eyes steady on him.
You still think there's trouble?
The other asked quietly. Wedge grimaced, throwing one last look out the viewport at the freighter.
Probably not. But it won't hurt to be ready. Anyway, I can't have my pilots sitting around drinking tea all day.
He turned and left the bridge at a quick jog. The other 11 members of Rogue Squadron were in their X-Wings by the time he reached the Larkess's docking bay. 3 minutes later, they launched. The freighter hadn't made much headway, Wedge saw, as they swung up over the Larkess's hull and pulled together into a loose patrol formation. Oddly enough, though, it had moved a considerable distance laterally, drifting away from the Larkess and toward a pair of Calamari star cruisers orbiting together a few kilometers away.
Spread out formation, Wedge ordered his pilots, shifting to an asymptotic approach course. Let's swing by and take a nice casual little look.
The others acknowledged. Wedge glanced down at his nav scope, made a minor adjustment to his speed, looked back up again, and in the space of a single heartbeat, the whole thing went straight to hell. The freighter blew up, all at once, without any warning from sensors, without any hint from previous visual observation. It just came apart. Reflexively, Wedge jabbed for his comm control.
Emergency, he barked. Ship explosion near orbit dock V-475. Send rescue team.
For an instant, as chunks of cargo bay flew outward, he could see into the emptiness there. But even as his eyes and brain registered the odd fact that he could see into the disintegrating cargo bay, but not beyond it, the bay was suddenly no longer empty. One of the X-Wing pilots gasped. A tight-packed mass of something was in there, totally filling the space where the Larkess's sensors had read nothing. A mass that was even now exploding outward like a hornet's nest behind the pieces of the bay. A mass that in seconds had resolved itself into a boiling wave front of TIE fighters.
Pull up! Wedge snapped to his squadron, leaning his X-Wing into a tight turn to get out of the path of that deadly surge. Come around and reform! S-foils in attack position!
And as they swung around in response, he knew with a sinking feeling that Captain Affion had been wrong. Rogue Squadron was indeed going to earn its pay today. The battle for Sluis Van had begun. They'd cleared the outer system defense network and the bureaucratic overload that passed for control at Sluis Van these days, and Han was just getting a bearing on the slot they'd given him when the emergency call came through.
Luke! He shouted back down the cockpit corridor. Got a ship explosion. I'm gonna go check it out.
He glanced at the orbit dock map to locate V-475, gave the ship a fractional turn to put them on the right vector, and jerked in his seat as a laser bolt slapped the Falcon hard from behind. He had them gunning into a full forward evasive maneuver before the second shot went sizzling past the cockpit. Over the roar of the engines, he heard Luke's startled-sounding yelp, and as a third bolt went past, he finally had a chance to check the aft sensors to see just what was going on. He almost wished he hadn't. Directly behind them, batteries already engaging one of the Sluis Van perimeter battle stations, was an Imperial Star Destroyer. He swore under his breath and kicked the engines a little harder. Beside him, Luke clawed his way forward against the not-quite-compensated acceleration and into the co-pilot's seat.
What's going on? He asked.
We just walked into an Imperial attack,
Han growled, eyes flying over the readouts.
Got a Star Destroyer behind us. There's another one over to starboard. Looks like some other ship's with them.
They've got the system bottled up, Luke said, his voice glacially calm.
A far cry, Han thought, from the panicky kid he'd pulled off Tatooine out from under Star Destroyer fire all those years back.
I make it 5 Star Destroyers and something over 20 smaller ships.
Han grunted.
At least we know why they hit Bipfash and the others. Wanted to pull enough ships here to make an attack worth their while.
The words were barely out of his mouth when the emergency comm channel suddenly came to life again.
Emergency! Imperial TIE fighters in orbit dock area! All ships to battle stations!
Luke started. That sounded like Wedge, he said, punching for transmission.
Wedge, that you?
Luke!
The other came back.
We've got trouble here. At least 40 TIE fighters and 50 truncated cone-shaped things I've never seen before.
He broke off as a screech from the X-Wing's etheric rudder came faintly over the speaker.
I hope you've brought a couple of wings of fighters with you,
he said.
We're going to be a little pressed here.
Luke glanced at Han.
Afraid it's just Han and me and the Falcon, but we're on our way.
Make it fast!
Luke keyed off the speaker.
Is there any way to get me into my X-Wing?
He asked.
Not fast enough, Han shook his head. We're gonna have to drop it here and go in alone.
Luke nodded, getting out of his seat.
I'd better make sure Lando and the droids are strapped in, and then get up into the gunwale.
Take the top one!
Han called after him. The upper deflector shields were running stronger at the moment, and Luke would have more protection there. If there was any protection to be had from 40 TIE fighters and 50 truncated flying cones. For a moment, he frowned as a strange thought suddenly struck him. But no, they couldn't possibly be Lando's missing mole miners. Even a Grand Admiral wouldn't be crazy enough to try to use something like that in battle. Boosting power to the forward deflectors, he took a deep breath and headed in.
All ships, commence attack!
Pelion called.
Full engagement! Maintain position and status!
He got confirmations, turned to Thrawn.
All ships report engaged, sir,
he said. But the Grand Admiral didn't seem to hear him. He just stood there at the viewport, gazing outward at the New Republic ships scrambling to meet them, his hands gripped tightly behind his back.
Admiral?
Pelion asked cautiously.
That was them, Captain,
Thrawn said, his voice unreadable.
That ship straight ahead, that was the Millennium Falcon, and it was towing an X-Wing starfighter behind it.
Pelion frowned past the other. The glow of a drive was indeed barely visible past the flashing laser bolts of the battle, already pretty well out of combat range, and trying hard to be even more so. But as to the design of the craft, much less its identity...
Yes, sir,
he said, keeping his tone neutral.
Cloak Leader reports a successful breakout, and that the command section of the freighter is making its escape to the periphery. They're encountering some resistance from escort vehicles and a squadron of X-Wings, but the general response has so far been weak and diffuse.
Thrawn took a deep breath and turned away from the viewport.
That will change,
he told Pelion, back in control again.
Remind him not to push his envelope too far, or to waste excessive time in choosing his targets. Also, that the space trooper mole miner should concentrate on Calamari star cruisers. They're likely to have the largest number of defenders aboard.
The red eyes glittered.
And inform him that the Millennium Falcon is on its way in.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said. He glanced out the viewport again, at the distant fleeing ship. Towing an X-Wing?
You don't think... Skywalker?
Thrawn's face hardened.
We'll know soon,
he said quietly.
And if so, Talon Karn will have a great deal to answer for. A great deal.
Watch it, Rogue Five!
Wedge warned as a flash of laser fire from somewhere behind him shot past and nicked the wing of one of the X-Wings ahead.
We've picked up a tail!
I noticed,
the other came back.
Pinsir?
On my mark,
Wedge confirmed as a second bolt shot past him. Directly ahead, a Calamari star cruiser was pulling sluggishly away, trying to get out of the battle zone. Perfect cover for this kind of maneuver. Together, he and Rogue Five dived underneath it.
Now!
Leading hard on his etheric rudder, he peeled off hard to the right. Rogue Five did the same thing to the left. The pursuing TIE fighter hesitated between his diverging targets a split second too long, and even as he swung around to follow Wedge, Rogue Five blew him out of the sky.
Nice shooting,
Wedge said, giving the area a quick scan. The TIE fighter still seemed to be everywhere, but for the moment at least, none of them was close enough to give them any trouble. Five noticed that too.
We seem to be out of it, Rogue Leader.
Easy enough to fix,
Wedge told him. His momentum was taking him farther under the Star Cruiser they'd used for cover. Curving up and around it, he started to spiral back toward the main battle area. He was just swinging up along the Star Cruiser's side when he noticed the small cone-shaped thing nestled up against the larger ship's hull. He craned his neck for a better look as he shot past. It was one of the little craft that had come out with the TIE fighters, all right, sitting pressed up against the Star Cruiser's bridge blister as if it were welded in place. There was a battle.